Stay with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sulis. Interested in learning new skills online at a pace that suits you? Visit ecollege.ie to apply for one of our free online courses.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now it's time for the Friday Gathering, and this week I'm joined from our Cork studio by Minister of State with responsibility for the Office of Public Works and Fine Gael TD for Limerick County, Patrick O'Donovan. Matt Carthy is here, Sinn Féin TD for Cavan Monaghan and party spokesperson on agriculture, Louise Byrne, political correspondent at the Irish Mirror, and Professor Niamh Harrigan, who's a sociologist and vice president of academic affairs at Mary Immaculate College in Limerick. I want to start with the lotto, because they're in the news again today, being criticised by members of the Public Accounts Committee because the lotto only puts 2% of unclaimed prizes back into the prize funds. The rest, we learned, is spent on marketing. And Matt, you were on the committee, the PAC committee, and you accused them when the lottery were in yesterday of taking the piss, to use your words. Why?
Well, so...
You look surprised that I said it. You said it first.
Well, I said it in the heat of the moment, Claire. But yes, it was a very frustrating meeting, I have to say. This is a body that was privatised under a Fine Gael Labour government in an absolutely disastrous move financially in terms of what the state will lose over the lifetime of the contract. And there were very few stipulations put on the private entity taking over the National Lottery. And one of them was that unclaimed prizes, that a portion of that amount must be spent on topping up prizes or having special draws, and that another amount could be spent, if they wished, on marketing and advertising. What the company decided to do was spend 98% on marketing and advertising.
But they were entitled to do that under the licence.
They were, but the public are also entitled to know, and the Public Accounts Committee are within their entitlement to ask questions as to how they came to that decision. And remember, that decision only came to light as a result of a report carried out by the Controller and Auditor General, not by the regulator, who was aware of it. And when the CNAG's report indicated that they were going to highlight that, the company actually tried to have that aspect of the report redacted. So to my mind, this is in the public interest. The public have a right to know how the company are implementing an obligation on them. And as I said, it was incredibly minimalistic. So for every tenner in terms of unpaid, unclaimed prizes, 20 cent is going to the purpose for which they are actually mandated to ensure that they pay something towards.
OK, so at the start of that answer, Patrick O'Donovan, Matt pointed the finger at the Fine Gael-led government in 2014 that put this licence together. Do you accept that this was a slip-up now? Because they're perfectly entitled to do this under that licence.
No, I don't, because, again, you know, take a rose-tinted view of history now. Look at Ireland in 2014 in terms of the economic backdrop that the Fine Gael Labour government was trying to navigate its way through, and the rationale and the reason behind taking the decision we did around the National Lottery licence. I actually don't think anybody at the time was jumping up and down saying this was the wrong thing to do. I think most people were looking to see sources of money and revenue that could be brought into the country to make sure that basic public services were maintained without having any impact on the service that was potentially being privatised, which was the case here. The issue here isn't in relation to privatisation. The issue here is in relation to regulation. And I think the Public Accounts Committee have done actually a brilliant job yesterday in exposing the fact that 122 of 124 million did not go into top-up prizes. And remember my colleague...
So Matt Carthy is right. Are you saying this, Patrick?
I'm saying...
Because we need to mark this moment.
I'm saying... Oh, well, sure, look, it's Christmas, Claire. I'm saying, I'm saying that the Public Accounts Committee, as a non-political, and it never takes a party political line, well, most of the time it doesn't, has done a very good job here in exposing the fact that I believe there are serious questions for the regulator to answer around the issue associated with why is it that the money that should be topped up isn't. And if you go back to last summer, 12 months, and you'll recall my colleague Bernard Durkin taking on the lottery. And at the start, people scoffed at him and said that he was, you know, it was a kind of a bit of a joke. It didn't become a bit of a joke when everybody started the bandwagon and realised there was actually a problem here. And ultimately what happened? The National Lottery changed. So I think now there's an issue here for the regulator to answer. And I think the Public Accounts Committee would be doing us all some service by bringing the regulator in to give close scrutiny to why was it that, given that this was a fairly comprehensive licence that was issued in the first place, that there wasn't a greater level of what I call enforcement around the actual imposition of that
licence. Is that the plan, Matt, to bring the regulator in?
We've had the regulator in and we intend to bring them back. The difficulty is that both the regulator and the company are able to point to the terms of the privatisation, and they are both technically correct. There's a difficulty in terms, and the best that the Public Accounts Committee can do is shine a light on this, and there will probably be a need for some legislative change in respect of, in the first instance, the accountability, but and the publication of information. And this goes beyond simple things in terms of the issue we're talking about. It also goes to the heart of player welfare measures. The lottery refused to answer questions in relation to the amount of money they spend on player welfare, the amount of staff that are dedicated to it, even the number of people that have been removed from their website from being able to overspend. Okay. So there's huge levels of areas. So some of those areas can be dealt with through and should be dealt with through the regulator, but others will need legislative change.
Niamh Harrigan wants to say something here. Go ahead, Niamh.
So I actually disagree with Patrick in the sense that just because people weren't jumping up and down about the privatisation in 2014, it doesn't mean the privatisation was done well. And I think what we're learning from the Public Accounts Committee now is flaws in the privatisation process. And this is not the only context in which we're seeing this. Look at the macro crisis that we're facing at the moment in terms of energy. And that, again, exposes the massively flawed relationship that we're seeing between privatisation and subsequent regulation. And we're seeing regulation fail all over the place. And I do think, you know, there's still outstanding areas of our economy. Water is one in particular where there are debates going on around private and public ownership. The lessons need to be learned and they need to be embraced by the Fine Gael in particular, who very much championed this. And it has to be said, very much with the backing of the ECB and the Troika at the time. And that has to be acknowledged. But there are lessons to be learned here. And certainly, I think there is, in my view, a massive issue for the lotto at the moment in terms of, I myself was in a news agent last week and I saw somebody who is clearly not well off at all go in and spend a very significant amount of money on scratch cards. Player welfare. Yeah. I mean, there's been a realisation around gambling in a much broader sense and it hasn't impacted on the lotto and we need to see that happen.
And I think that's why it's interesting that the lottery is actually not included in this new gambling regulation bill, because they're saying, and we asked this when this regulation bill was being published a few weeks ago, and the answer was, well, they have their own licence under the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform. And I think it was you, Matt, asked yesterday, well, how much can you spend in a day? How much can you spend in a weekend and a month? And he went through all of that, the guy from Premier Lotteries. And
€900 in a month.
Which is a huge, and that's a huge amount of money if you don't have it. And I think the fact that the government hasn't actually included the lottery in this gambling regulation bill, it does kind of send out a message. And to be honest, if the lottery doesn't feel like gambling, well, then you're going to be more likely to go and do it and go and keep doing it.
Of course, the marketing that all this money was spending on is very much emphasising that it's not gambling, well, that it's something wonderful you're doing for the entire country.
We asked the National Lottery operator, Premier Lotteries Ireland, for a statement on all of this morning. So they sent something in, which I'm going to bring you now. The licence stipulates that PLI, that's the operator, must spend unclaimed prize money on promoting the National Lottery. In PLI's experience, spending on marketing has a much bigger impact on sales than top-up prizes. So marketing generates more prize money for players, funding for good causes and commission for retailers in the community. Our promotion, and people will have seen this ad, claim that 90% of sales go to the community, which is defined as prizes, good causes and retail commissions. So goes to the community means prizes. And they say this is in line with the licence, we know that, and has also been confirmed by the regulator of the National Lottery and the ASI. Do you agree with that, Patrick, just to finish on this?
Well,
that
look,
sales,
I mean,
that's
a good way of putting it, like it's going to the community because they're paying it out in
yes.
I mean, that's a bit Irish now.
Because I think when you
it.
Say going to the community, people would imagine that that's funding for community projects.
Well,
right?
Like when you think of it, the broadcasters and publications of media and online have benefited to the tune of 124 million. Now, Niamh is right in relation to the issue of gambling. I think there's an issue here in relation to our broadcasters as well. And actually, you know, the concept...
What do you mean, running the ads?
No, I think that, like, in terms of, you know, a time in the day by which the, you know, ads of that nature shouldn't be considered. Because people are vulnerable. And I know people who buy... with very small amounts of fixed income, huge amounts of scratch cards, and because it's almost like an addiction, and it's something I think we have to take very seriously. And I know my colleague Jennifer Carroll McNeill has raised this as well. you know, if we do need to strengthen the licence around the national lottery, when they're playing with words that the actual money is going into prizes as opposed to going into community centres or sports grants.
Why didn't you include it in the Gambling Regulation Bill, tackled advertising, Patrick?
I think the best way to do it is in any re-examination of the licence. And by the way, just going back again, not to rehash history, but Ireland in 2014 and Ireland in 2022, two totally different places where this country was essentially bankrupt, had lost its economic sovereignty, lost its ability to determine its own economic future.
Yeah, well, and I suppose you could have sold it, but put the regulation in properly.
If we sold it, then we wouldn't have anywhere but all maybe to take it back into state custody when it might be actually able to produce more money for us in the future. And I'm sure the very same people who'd have a problem now with the licence would be saying, well, why did you do that? You shouldn't have sold it at all.
Well, just to clarify, Sinn Féin told the government at the time that they shouldn't sell the national lottery. It was a potential annual income that should be coming to the state and instead is going to a Canadian pension fund.
All right, I want to move on because our time, just watching the clock here, but I want to talk about the weather, Patrick O'Donovan, because I know the Office of Public Works is under your responsibility. Great reports from Donegal this morning. They're all set up, ready to go with the gritting. They've been at it there overnight as well and ready to go again today. But in other parts of the country, not so successful. And I'm getting messages in from people in Dublin and Wicklow in particular saying the roads were absolutely treacherous. People trying to get out to school today in estates, housing estates, onto slippy roads, just impassable in places.
Yeah, so the Be Winter Ready campaign under Transport Infrastructure Ireland and the Department of Transport element of this has, you know, a huge amount of salt order already in stockpiles all across the country, just short of 200,000 tonnes. We only used 80,000 tonnes during the years 21 and 22 together. So it'll tell you that we're well resourced in terms of salt. Then in terms of, you know, the machinery that's out there by TII and the local authorities, there's an adequate amount of machinery there to spread it.
Are you happy, though, that it was done to the extent that it needed to be done overnight and into today?
Well, I tell you now, I travelled from Dublin last night to Limerick in freezing fog and I must have passed five or six gritters on the road in several different counties. Mm. And our local authorities are out in force they've been preparing for this. The temperatures are going to drop further. It may actually develop into an orange weather warning if, for instance, the temperatures go below -5 and between -5 and -9. So this could get worse. But we have an adequate amount of salt that we have purchased. It is banked all over the country to make sure that the local authorities that need it can spread it.
Louise Byrne is shaking her head here as you're speaking.
I was coming in the N11 there about an hour ago and the roads are still lethal. There are still sheets of ice on the road the whole way in from nearly out towards Bray into Donnybrook. The roads are really lethal. The footpaths are really, really bad. I was chatting to one of my friends earlier. She was saying she was driving through Blackrock Village this morning that the road was so thick on the ice was so thick on the road you couldn't even see the road markings.
And Claire, can I just say, I travelled from Newcastle West to Cork today through freezing fog at a maximum speed of 80 kilometres an hour and the road from Newcastle West to Cork was perfect.
Yeah, I suppose what people would expect though is uniformity, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, there is a difference. I came up from Limerick this morning. It was -5 when I left at 8 o'clock, which is pretty, pretty cold. And I suppose one of the things I do think is that it's been such a mild autumn. I think in some ways, even though we knew this was coming, it has taken people by surprise in terms of getting their cars, or getting into the mindset of leaving the extra time. Even though, I mean, the M7 was well gritted when I was going, I saw a number of collisions on the way. It's particularly problematic as you get closer to Dublin, where you have lots of cars close together and people are weaving in and out. And that is creating. So, I mean, there is a driver, I suppose we all need to put ourselves into that winter driving mindset as well.
Niamh, I wanted to talk to you about this plan we heard mooted to change teachers' career breaks this week. Now, I'm not sure where we stand on that because it seemed to have been put out there and then pulled back pretty quickly. What did you think of the idea?
So I suppose, first of all, I have to declare an interest here because obviously, as somebody who's Vice President of Mary I, we have benefited a lot over the years from the career break scheme in the sense that we have had teachers working, coming in, finishing their PhDs with us and often lecturing with us. And, you know, one of the things, one of the strengths of our education system is that our practice at primary level is really good. And that's because we have practicing teachers coming in, teaching new teachers. So I'll say that first. The second thing is, I think the way broadly in which the education sector works, and we've heard a lot of complaints about Leaving Cert reform and how slow moving it is. But one of the reasons it's so slow moving is that there tends to be a lot of connection and collaboration and communication between the various entities. So between the department, between, for instance, the Teaching Council, between the unions. What surprised me about this kite that flew this week is that it seemed to come out of nowhere. I hadn't heard it as somebody who's in that space every day. The unions were, not surprisingly, very taken aback. My concern, to be honest with you, Claire, more than anything else, because obviously this is a space that we're in at the moment, because it's also suggested that third and fourth year students who are learning to be teachers will go out and help support schools. And that's something we did during the pandemic and we're happy to do. But there was a sense in the pandemic that that it was something that was going to come to an end. Mm-hmm. There's a concern now that really, and this is what somebody said to me, Mary, you know, the problem here is the housing crisis. We can't solve the housing crisis. The teacher supply shortage, more than anything else, is actually being driven by the housing crisis. That's why it's at its worst in Dublin. We have very well trained teachers. They're very attractive internationally. People are coming from the Middle East and other parts of the world to recruit them.
Yeah, we had the Australians on here. They were overlooking for Irish teachers as well.
And like the reality is that, you know, all the temporary measures you can introduce, they may make small impacts. I personally think the career break one will generate a lot more aggro than it would actually will release teachers, notwithstanding the understandable frustrations of principals. But really, you have to tackle housing, and it's the same issue for the guards.
Do you agree with that, Patrick?
To a certain degree, I do, because first of all, the Minister of Education is very clear there's no proposal to change anything around career breaks, because a lot of teachers, especially young teachers, benefit from career breaks, because when a career break is taken by teacher A, teacher B can come in and get their probation completed within a couple of years of finishing, say, in Mary Eye, where I went myself. So it's a value to young teachers as well to actually get them an opportunity. It's also a value to teachers that will come back into the classroom, that they've gone away and got a bit of life experience, and they can impart that to students, particularly at primary level. But in relation to teacher availability, it isn't all about housing. I mean, in rural areas, I know principals who can't get subs either. It isn't that that we have the same level of crisis in some of our towns and villages in terms of housing availability as there would be in larger urban centres. But there is a genuine lack of qualified teachers that would. Now, we have support panels and we have supply panels, and they came in particularly during COVID, and they're really welcome. But I think we need to encourage more people into the profession to see it as a profession of that people can gain a good income from and be, you know, get a good career out of, and especially young men. When I was in Mary Mackley College not that long ago, it was only about 10 or 12% of my class were male. So we do need to encourage an awful lot more men into primary teaching.
Just to be your own status, are you on a career break?
I'm not, Claire.
No, you're not. You're out of it.
I'm not, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners will probably be disappointed to hear that. I didn't have a permanent position, because going back to 2011, 2012, 2014, in a country that was bust, we didn't have the availability of being able to appoint teachers to permanent positions.
Yeah, there is an indirect and a direct relationship between housing and the teaching crisis, and that's important. So the first direct one is that if you're a young teacher and you're earning a certain amount of money, it makes no financial sense for you to work in Dublin, because your earnings relative to your rent won't completely negate the other. That's the direct relationship. And to be honest with you, there's a very significant shortage of housing in many rural areas as well. But the second one, and the one that I think was really being trying to catch with the career break issue, is that you do get teachers who have their permanent job, but who say, I am paying so much rent, I'll never be able to afford to buy my house. I can go and work in Dubai for 5 years, I can save a deposit, and then I can come back to my permanent job, which banks like, and I can then buy a house. So there's actually a direct and indirect relationship there.
The difficulty is, and we're seeing this across within our health services as well as within our education services, and the fact is we have lots of well-qualified Irish teachers and nurses and doctors. The difficulty is that a large proportion of them are in other parts of the world, providing a top-class service, making those countries better because of the education they received in this state. And we're doing nothing to encourage those people to come back. Lots of them will be home for the Christmas. Some of them might be weighing up their options. And the message that they're hearing from government over the past 2 weeks is, one, the grass isn't always greener when they're actually living in green pastures already, and secondly, that they will actually are contemplating lowering the terms and conditions, in other words, removing the option of career breaks.
But they're not, though.
Well, where did it come from?
I don't know, the minister said it, but it seemed to be pulled back.
So it came from
the minister didn't say it. Where did it come from, Patrick? It was in an internal document that was prepared by the Department of Education. And I think this is to be fair. Norma Foley did not say that. But what she did say was, it is not an option.
She said that 2 days into an absolute debacle.
They are evaluating. They are evaluating.
They're evaluating
current non-statutory leave yes. and to consider and that, whether that temporary and modest amendments to these leave schemes of, could support
that's a whole
teachers
range
survive.
That's a whole range of types of leave. But the minister made it very clear, career breaks are not included in that consideration.
Can we move on to the fact that the Irish state turned 100 this week? It was a topic for discussion. I know Joe covered it on Liveline. It was pretty quiet, not much celebrating or marking of it, certainly not on the national stage. Was that the right call, Matt?
Well, people who wanted to mark it were well within their rights to mark it. And in itself, it was a historical occasion of note. To me, the partition of our country isn't something to be celebrated. To me, what we should be looking back on when we're analysing the entire events of a century ago is rededicating ourselves to ensuring that we undo what were massive failures at that time, including and particularly the partition of our country.
So the 6th of December this week, Michael Dees, the President of Ireland, was actually in Mary Eye giving Peter McVerry a medal, which I suppose suggests how much, and we saw this with the controversy around the service last year. I think across the spectrum in Ireland, even with people who are not necessarily very Republican, partition is not regarded as something to be commemorated or celebrated. And also the immediate circumstances in which that government were established were so tragic. They were so brutal. There was so much of a loss of idealism from the earlier. Somebody said to me this week, you know, the poetry was lost from, if you look at the journey from 1916 to 1922. And we are still living with the legacy of that, not only in terms of the partition of the North, but also the way in which the Civil War divide, even despite the current coalition, dominates the two largest parties in the state. So it's still there. And I agree. I think it was the right call, Claire.
And Patrick O'Donovan, you don't agree with that assessment. You think that this shows a lack of maturity, do you?
I do, yeah. I think 100 years later, and no one's talking about celebration, I think 100 years after the foundation of a state in very difficult times, and by the way, partition was decided a long time before that, a country that has evolved since then, you know, continued its democracy, the fourth longest serving continuing democracy in Europe. We have a lot of parallels between ourselves and Finland, a very difficult civil war after Finland got its independence, but it still marks its Independence Day. And I think 100 years later, it shows a scant disregard to the people on both sides of the divide and those who gave their lives to serve the state that we don't commemorate and acknowledge in a formal state way the coming into being of the Irish state.
Louise?
Well, Fine Gael did actually mark it, which was interesting. They were one of the only ones that did, and they went big. They did a lot of social media videos. I know they had an event on Monday evening as well. I'm not sure if Patrick was there.
I was, yeah.
But I mean, during the decade of centenaries, we've marked nearly all the other ones. I think it is quite interesting that this wasn't celebrated or marked or whatever term you want to use. I mean, whether that's the right call, I don't know. It could have caused a lot of controversy, like Matt said. But
I think
Fine Gael seems to be the only one that did.
UCD, he gave a speech at the big conference, which was the only real public event to mark it in UCD last week. And actually, his speech, I thought, was excellent in terms of outlining all the difficulties around this particular anniversary.
That's
for
it. First time. Thank you all very much for being here. Patrick O'Donovan, thanks. Matt Carthy, Louise Byrne and Professor Niamh Harrigan. That's it from us for the week. Thank you for listening. Thank you very much to the team. The programme was produced today by Barbara Feeney, researched by Ciarán Dunn. Stephen Higgins was our broadcast coordinator. Tommy O'Sullivan was on sound. It's over now at 12 midday to Ronan.